Hello. Thank you. We have a quorum and we are going to begin. So I'm calling this meeting to order. Thank you. Our first item of business is to consider the meeting minutes of February 18th, 2025. Any corrections, additions, changes? Motion?
I read those. I'll make a motion and I'll second
the
motion.
Okay, I think that's to approve.
To approve.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. All right. We're now going to consider programming funds to specific ITS projects. We have some technical sheets behind, as recommended by the technical committee.
You did it.
I did it.
Every year we program $150,000 to ITS projects throughout the MPL region. This list here that is in your packets, it was also emailed out, is a list of the projects that are being nominated for funding this year. The total is $314,000 on that list, but that represents 2 years of ITS funding, fiscal year 2024 and 2025 funding. These projects have been reviewed by the technical committee, and they recommend that this body move to approve this expenditure.
Anybody have any questions about why we do this?
Yeah.
Yes. Why do we do this?
Why do we do this?
Am I answering your question or his?
They're both the same question.
Okay. Our transportation system works best when we have upgraded signals and upgraded cameras and everything in the cabinets. Years ago, 2008, the executive committee and the technical committee guided us to set aside funding every year for ITS upgrades that cities would have a difficult time paying on their own. And so we've just always done it. We don't need to continue, but it's always been a good thing that...
Is this subsidized, heavily supported? We do it because we're incentivized to do it?
No, we just, as a board... Years ago, they decided to set aside this money for this program.
Well, that answers the question. Anybody have any other questions?
It's your choice. You can choose to not.
I mean, it's not that it's a bad thing to do. I just wonder why.
Yeah.
And it's only on the lights. It doesn't sound right.
So ITS is the information technology system. So the communication system between lights and the traffic operation center.
So the technical folks are recommending this, and they're the ones who kind of know how these things operate. Everybody all right with it?
Mayor Hart, I'll make a motion that if you're looking for a motion, ready?
Can do.
Okay. That we approve the programming funds to the specific ITS projects that we presented in your
packet. Second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Lots of them. Did you catch that, Jan?
Do we need to say a dollar amount for $314,000?
If you want to have that in the minutes.
Yeah, everything as it's proposed on this sheet.
Yeah, so that's covered by what she said. All right, all in favor, please.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Guess it's tradition. We're going to keep on doing it.
All right.
Whether we know why we're doing it or not.
It's bigger than tradition. I mean, if you didn't do this, everything would just be outdated. You wouldn't be able to talk between each other. It's like, why do you get a new phone every couple of years? It's the same reason.
Now, why didn't you say it's like getting a new phone? We all understand that.
So if the MPO did not put these monies into these ITS upgrades, then the cities would be responsible to do that on their own.
There you go.
So, and Kirk is right.
It's vital to what we do.
Yeah.
Well, it's done.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, jumping to a review of last month's programming of $198,000 to SR 18 Trail Snow Canyon DeVail report.
So on this program, we programmed that money to that trail, and then we later discovered that we're not allowed to spend the money outside the MPO boundary, and this trail is outside the MPO boundary. So we've had to cancel this project. So we have that $198,000 available still to be programmed. The technical committee would like to reprogram those funds in their regular cycle this coming October.
Oh, I was just going to volunteer the city of St. George to take care of that.
Hey, it's a good Tuesday when you make $198,000.
It's $198,000 we wanted to spend, but we can't spend it in this way, so we'll have to spend
it. Does everybody want St. George City just to get it?
That seems like a good idea.
So what we're looking at is that just going back into the kitty for allocation when the
end. In October.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Presentation on the Bike Ambassador Program by Springdale and Zion National Park. Thank you for doing this.
Hey, welcome. I'm going to stand up so you can all hear me better. So Zion National Park is not here, but you've got a couple of pieces of paper in front of you that have a little bit more information about the program, including some of the numbers of bikes they're seeing in the park, that kind of thing. But I wanted to give you a little bit of background. Yeah. So the problem that initiated this whole thing was that originally Springdale had two bike shops, and they were real bike shops where you could buy bikes, you could have them repaired, that kind of thing. And one rented pedal bikes, but they were really kind of serious mountain bikes, and they did adventure trips, and people would rent the bikes and go out on an adventure with them. And the other rented bicycles around town in Zion National Park, and it was pretty manageable. But in July of 2017, the bike shop started to give you bikes. And so now it was possible for everybody to get around on a bike, whether they could do it on their own or not. So then in early 2020, when COVID hit and the shuttle started to require reservations, we had all kinds of e-bike rental shops pop open, and they were everywhere. So even hotels have bikes that they rent. Retail shops have e-bikes that they rent. We had one guy who lived in an apartment and was renting e-bikes out of his apartment, which, you know, he was storing them outside, and we ended up revising our home occupation ordinance to say you can't rent equipment and you can't store things outside because his neighbors have people coming and going all the time. But it was a very lucrative business, so a lot of them started doing it. So during COVID, there was a day when Zion National Park counted almost 600 bikes parked up at the Temple of Sinababa at one time. So it was kind of pushing the limits of people putting their bikes, you know, storing their bikes while they were hiking and that kind of thing. Certainly there were not enough bike racks, and most e-bikes have kickstands, but it's hard to secure them if you don't have a bike rack. And the other thing that was happening during COVID is that they were giving permission to a lot of private shuttles to bring people into the park. So visitors were paying $100 a pop to go in, get dropped off, and then the shuttle would pick them up at the end of the day. In fact, the woman that went missing for 2 weeks, she rode up on a private shuttle and wasn't there when they came to pick her up later, and that's how they knew that she was missing. So parking was becoming a problem because some of the hotels, most notably the La Quinta, had e-bike rentals in the retail shops. And so people would come to rent an e-bike and they would park in a spot that was intended to be used by an overnight guest and stay there all day. So they ended up kicking the Zion Guru bike rental out of that hotel. So we were seeing a lot of problems, not just with e-bikes on the road, but also with parking. And then they were renting the bikes for the day, they were having a good time, they were going into the park, and then when they got done in the park, they were riding them around town and riding them on the sidewalks, and it became a problem not only for Zion National Park, but also for the town of Springdale. And then, if that wasn't bad enough, as of May 3rd, 2023, the state of Utah passed a law that said that we could not disallow mobile businesses. So all of a sudden, there was this option for people to load a trailer full of e-bikes, pull them up into Springdale, and rent them out of there, which we thought was kind of unfair competition with the brick-and-mortar shops, but we didn't have a choice. So it had to be on private property. It couldn't be on the roads. But so that's kind of where the problem came in, people who were not familiar with e-bikes or bikes in general were getting onto these bikes, and the minute we hit the pedal, it takes off. So they were going out in traffic. It was amazing nobody was killed because there were a lot of accidents on bikers. So we ended up passing an ordinance in Springdale that said if you have outdoor e-bikes for rent, there has to be a physical barrier between where people get the bike and the road. So it could be a hedge, it could be a low wall or something like that. But these are just things you need to think about if you've got businesses with e-bikes, is the unintended consequences. And we even talked about regulating, you know, not allowing any more e-bike shops to come in. And our attorney said that he didn't think that we could do that legally. So this was about the time that the park started a bike ambassador program. There's a lot of information about it, I think, in here, about the reasons that they started it, in addition to the e-bike problem. And I also put on one of these handouts some of the regulations around the types of bikes and that kind of thing, even in Utah, some of the regulations. But the program is not meant to be punitive. We talked about giving the bike ambassadors, so let me back up. The bike ambassadors are mostly people who live in Springdale, they're residents, and they have volunteered for the program. The program is administered by Zion National Park, specifically by Amanda Rowland, but the people that ride their bikes and do the program are generally retirees that live in the town of Springdale. We talked about giving authority to write tickets when they saw people doing things wrong and decided that two things. One is that we probably didn't have the authority to do that. And then two is just that it wasn't really meant to be punitive. It was more to help people do the right thing by educating them to do the right thing. So the bike ambassadors ride around on the Payless Trail and up into the canyon. They count the bikes in the park, again, to see how many bike racks might be needed. And they work with our bike shops. So they'll go into our bike shops and help them understand their responsibility. They have to educate renters. They have to have a practice area for people to ride around before they go out onto the street. One of the stupid things you'd think would be just kind of intuitive, people were getting the narrow sticks to go up into the narrows, and instead of having them vertically on their bike, they'd have them go across and then go down the Payless Trail and take people out seriously. Like, so educate people how to carry the sticks. In fact, as a result of that, most of the bikes that they rent now have a little container that they can put the bikes in. One of the things that they're taught by the bike shops is that they need to stop and get off the bike when a shuttle comes. The shuttles are not allowed to pass the bikes, and you can't just stop the bike and stand there. You have to physically get off the bike so they know that you won't go ahead. And you got to wear a helmet in the park. So there's a little bit about certain bikes are allowed, certain are not. The ambassadors do wear volunteer shirts that identify them as official bike ambassadors. Adam, you asked me about that last time, and I spoke. And they carry two-way radios, and they do encounter some medical emergencies, and they call for help, and that's the case. So the numbers that are on that sheet, you can see that there's a lot. Let me just see if there's anything else. So they only allow class one e-bikes, which are pedaled. They require pedal assist, and they have a pretty small motor. So I think that's about it. But if anyone's interested in coming up and talking with the ambassadors or riding along with them and seeing how it works or whatever, we'd be happy to facilitate that. But again, it is a program administered by Zion National Park, but mostly staffed by Springdale. Any questions?
Mayor, how long did you stay in the buildings?
They started it in 2020 during COVID.
How have you seen, has it improved the citizenship of your bike renters up there?
It has helped a lot. Yeah, it really has helped a lot. I mean, so any visitor might be there for the first time, and it's a learning curve every day up there. But we're seeing I think the best thing we did was to require that physical barrier so that we don't have bikes just shooting across the road anymore. But it's definitely helped. And when you get up on the Payless Trail, there's a lot better etiquette now than there used to be. And I think on any given day in the busy season, which has started, there might be three or four of the ambassadors riding around.
Mayor, did you say that there was a video that you created that the bike shops show?
No, they just talk to the people. They just train them when they come in.
Okay.
We don't have a specific video. It's just a quick going over the rules.
Okay.
Mayor, do they have a limitation on the speed of the bike? You mentioned class of bike.
Yeah, a class one bike only goes a maximum of 20 miles per hour. And they do have posted speed limits on the Peters Trail. I think there are 15 max on the Peters Trail.
Well, you're required to use a bell. On the Peters Trail, we tell you different things to do. But,
I don't think it's your requirement. It's a good idea, but I don't think it's your requirement. Unless you know something I don't.
It just said that on one of the. It says required, a bell required when passing or something. So.
Oh, okay. So that might be something that's kind of new. And I'm sure that
walkers
or the bikes must put up bells.
Mayor Bruno, you talked about how the city has responded to the increase of e-bike rentals in town. You specifically mentioned the HOA home occupancy.
The home occupancy ordinance?
No, the home business.
Yeah, we call that home occupancy.
Okay. And you also talked about the physical barrier ordinance that you passed. Were there other ordinances or anything that the city actually had to get in and mess with to make it more palatable for the e-bike rentals?
Well, yes and no. So I talked about, feeling like we had enough e-bike rentals and not wanting any more, but we were advised that we could not really stop that. But one thing we did, when we did a workforce housing overlay zone, we required, in order to get the zone, we required that there be a mix of businesses in there that so that if you wanted to open a nightly rental, you had to have, say, a retail shop or a restaurant or something that benefited the community. And e-bike shops were not allowed to fill that retail requirement. So just one subtle thing that we could do to discourage e-bike shops. Otherwise, that's what everybody would have opened is their mixed use. It's very lucrative. They're renting those bikes for, last I knew, about $100 a day. So they pay for themselves very quickly, and it's all gravy.
Thank you, Mayor Bruno.
You're welcome.
That was kind of you to do that. If you all recall, this originated with a comment that Councilmember Larkin made, if I'm remembering right, suggesting that we ought to consider something like this on our regional trail system. And so this was an attempt to provide some background for that discussion. So,
I don't know if we could maybe expand the discussion in one of our future meetings. We have Lloyd Sutton's here, and he's been working on the regional etiquette that would they would come together, I believe, to solve a lot of the issues that we're seeing on the trails and the complaints that we're having. And Lloyd, share with how far we are along with that if you want today.
I think so. I see the words bike ambassador program. I think that opens the door, so let's take advantage of what we have here to continue the discussion.
Do you mind? Or do you want him to share today, or should we put it on a future agenda?
I don't think it's a problem to do it because it's associated with this very closely, so let's do it.
Do you mind sharing, Lloyd, how far
we
are with
that? Yeah, I don't mind. I can give an update. So about a year ago, we wrapped up the planning process of that, and what St. George City has done going forward was we applied for MPO funds to implement the signage portion of that plan to get some of the signs out there. And then also our police department started allowing our volunteers in public safety to ride bikes along the trail. They had been operating a UTV to just patrol and check on the trails. We don't have anything quite to the level of Sound National Park. But some of our volunteers with the police department now hop on bikes and we'll ride the trails and inform people of rules, give assistance when needed. But that I feel like is pretty sparse on our trails right now. But we did receive funding and we're looking at some of the signage in this upcoming year. to address some of the main rules and etiquette issues that came up from our regional trail study. So we're making a little progress, but there's probably a lot more that can be made as well.
So the object of this discussion would be, like we have to do things cooperatively with the water district, for example, that we could, through our technical committee and others, come up with some standards of etiquette, that because the execution of this is all going to be by municipality, but if we could provide some guidance as to the kinds of things that ought to be considered for this, because as we approach having all of our communities interconnected, this becomes a regional experience, right? They're not just riding around necessarily in one city. And I think the hope is that we would provide some guidance and maybe suggested language for some adopted form in the various communities that would resemble each other, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing that I think maybe, I haven't talked to the county commissioners about this, but I feel like with the way that this is intertwined with tourism, it would be fantastic if there was a way for us to connect with the tourism board and maybe make a video. You know, so if you're a small town and you all of a sudden have an e-bike shop that wants to open up in your city, like, how do you give them proper guidance? If there's a video that we could disseminate, you know, around the county that basically gives the guidelines that Mayor Bruno's saying, that the shops are training them with, if there was cohesion, then we know everybody's getting the same information. I mean, I've been to climbing gyms before where you can't climb, even no matter how many times you've climbed, you have to watch the climbing video again to remember exactly how to climb safely, and I think it would be something along those lines that might be beneficial.
If you've never been close to one of these rental shops and seen what happens when people get on these things for the first time, right, Mayor Bruno? So I have one literally right around the corner from where I live, and I observe it all the time. And it's not, I mean, the kids actually do pretty well. It's when you get an adult on there and they crank that thing up, and it's a disaster waiting to happen. Now, we have the luxury of sending them up Snow Canyon where everybody's driving slowly, but that isn't necessarily the case everywhere. So, yeah, I totally favor that. Please.
So, Councilman, is this kind of an idea to kind of unify the trail system with etiquette, with rules, and light signage? So
yeah.
It'll be throughout the entire county, and so.
Yeah, it is, and I feel like if, you know, I mean, obviously this group would have to make the decision, but for instance, this money that we just allocated for, you know, cohesion through our systems, our ITS systems, maybe something similar to that, because I mean, St. Louis is benefited by being such a large municipality. We can apply for things, we can sometimes match money that maybe a smaller municipality wouldn't be able to do. So maybe we just have further conversation about what that looks like countywide so that we do have cohesion throughout our system. That it's not confusing for people when they come and they're going, well, I ride my bike like this in Ivins, but not in St. George, or the rules, all of a sudden it goes from 15 miles an hour to 25 miles an hour. That's confusing to people and it causes safety issues.
Does this study also, could it include, I guess the better word, like maps, the interconnectivity of clear from the eastern side of our county to the western side, and so people get an idea, if they're from out of town, they get an idea of how far they can go. That might be good.
We have $198,000 to get this thing started.
Where are you going to find that?
Yes.
Most of you know that I live right above the trail across from Confluence Park. And I work down in the backyard. And there are motorcycles at 5 o'clock and kids riding them. And they used to be at the end of the street there where it begins by Hill Road, a bollard. Because the other night, a full-blown razor-style 4x4 took the whole trail, they're wide, went right screaming by. If you come around a blind corner on a bike,
you're dead.
So I don't know if we're going to replace these bollards. I know it was hard for our VIPs to get on the trail, and they're side-by-side, but they're on bikes now. I don't know. the word needs to get out of speed limit, and then maybe that limited access again of some of these trailheads that come right off streets because they're being abused.
You know, it strikes me that this is something that ought to probably be addressed by either a committee or the technical committee with some interface, particularly with you, Councilmember Larkin, and you, Mayor Bruno, and others who would want to be involved in that, to come back to this. I mean, we can talk it through here, but that might be time-consuming, a little awkward, to come back with the nucleus, at least, of some optional things to consider as a part of this. I mean, good ideas just popping up here, you know, included in the training, you know, educate people as to where they can go and what they can do.
I have one more comment. You probably all know this, but the state of Utah does not, if you allow bikes on a trail, you must allow e-bikes. That doesn't mean you have to allow the razors or anything like that, but you can't forbid e-bikes.
Right. Without any limitation on the capacity of the e-bike, right?
Right. Well, you can, I'm not sure about the class 1, 2, and 3 with the state, but you can't allow pedal bikes only.
You can limit the speed, I believe, but.
So,
I've got some input on that. So the state can't prohibit, if you allow bikes, you also have to allow e-bikes. But e-bikes in state code have a specific definition that have speed limits associated with it. So there's three classes, two that are in 20 miles per hour with or without a throttle, and then one that's pedal assist only up to 28 miles per hour. But the code as it's written would specifically prohibit e-bikes that go faster than that. Those are technically motorcycles or off-highway vehicles. But I think we could do better at communicating what is an e-bike to the general population according to state code. Because they see anything with an electric motor that looks somewhat like a bike, and they think it's an e-bike. But it has to meet those certain speed criteria in order to actually be an e-bike rather than a motorcycle.
There are other parts of the definition, too, that has to have pedals that are part of the original manufacturer, not later, things like that, but separated from...
I see two committee members here. but that's up to you. Does that sound like a reasonable way to move forward with this?
Yeah, absolutely. And St. George City actually has an active transportation committee that involves like some of our police officers, and so I don't want to volunteer Lloyd unless he wants to be volunteered, but I mean he could head that up because he heads up the active transportation committee, just to at least get some ideas off the ground and come back and present some possibilities. And I don't know if we want to form a permanent committee that's associated with this group that would be separate. That's probably what we want to do.
Some recommending body. I mean, we could run it through our own technical
or
committee. We have those folks, but this is a little different than that.
We could do a subcommittee.
What do you guys think around the technical committee? Arthur, what do you think? Should I go through DTAC?
We could do a DTAC subcommittee that talks just about this stuff.
Yeah.
And bring back some ideas in the presentation if you want.
Well, it's a huge asset. People love it.
Yeah.
They want to use it. We just want to use it right, and it's getting abused. We're down at the bridge on the I-15 throwing rocks in the river trying to dam it up with my grandkids. You know, they were certain they were going to build a lake. And four big honking tired things went by, no pedals. It was clearly a motorcycle, but it looked like a big bike. I mean, we have to figure it out.
The lines are blurring, and in whoever's on the committee, you might want to check in with Wasatch County, because they have mountain bike trails where they don't allow e-bikes unless you're over a certain age, and you have to get a permit by going to the county or something and showing that you're that age. So there are ways to get around these things. But
well, you're on the committee.
Okay.
Let's make it very clear. How'd you like to be the committee chair, or Daniel? Yeah. So just this suggestion, that's a good mechanism to do this. Anyone who would be interested in participating on this, I don't think this is like our city council. I think as many as wanted to be a part of this could be. Why don't you just run that back through Jay-Ann, and Jay-Ann, if you'll cycle that, at least to the two of us, and then we'll send those names out, and that will be at least a nucleus for what that committee would be. Reasonable. But we want all the expertise in the room to be a part of this, because the ideal would be for you to come back with some very practical, experience based in other areas even, kinds of suggestions that we could consider.
I would think that it would be beneficial for any municipality or town that has a council or a town council or city council to have somebody there also, so that they can take this information back to their councils and be able to, you know, discuss funding and how that would interconnect. Might save us another step.
I think that's a great idea.
So Mayor Hart, maybe we could have Jan do an email, and we could just get responses back for everyone before we create a meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm happy to be on it as long as it's not a Monday.
Yeah, I mean,
seems
for sure.
Everybody puts things on Mondays. Yeah.
For sure, the county needs to be right in the middle of this. I mean,
happy to serve.
This
Well, I will report that last week I took, because of spring break, we took our grandkids up and we rode, and we have 9 e-bikes, and we didn't bring all of them, but we, the kids brought their own bikes, so we have children with their bikes riding with us, and ours are pedal assist, and so, but there were many people there. It was very amicable. Everyone, there were walkers, there were bikers, and there weren't any issues with any of the people that I saw. There weren't anyone going faster than the 10
miles. Where was
an hour.
You went up to the park?
We went up to the Parker's Trail. We went to the park and we rode Springdale and from the park. And I'm just going to say, I didn't see one issue, but that doesn't mean that there's not some. I'm just saying, probably because of this work, that it was conducive for everyone.
It's also because it's crowded. And so you're aware. That helps. It does. Because there's so many people,
sure.
So people are paying attention.
But
it's the best way to see the canyon.
But it was a great experience for our little 6 and 8
yeah,
and 9-year-old grandchildren and 11-year-old. They all enjoyed riding their bikes and seemed good.
Because
so.
The world's right there, no window, right? Well, it's really a worthy concept, and thank you for bringing it up, because I think that that this could translate into a really meaningful improvement in the way our trails get used and whatnot. And we've invested so heavily in these, you know, it would be a shame for it to result in tragedy more than just pure enjoyment, right? Have we heard everything we need to? Okay. Yes.
I think the committee should invite also someone from the Utah Trails Network to be serving on the committee. Because I'm sure if we're going to have the networks coming from the state to the regional level, we have freeway system connected to the
So maybe next meeting we could present an idea for the committee, and any other suggestions. This would be open, and anyone that needed to be a part of it should be. Okay. Legislative policy update.
So Nate Weiberg with our office has a quick presentation, and then we can open it up to the whole body.
Thank you, Nate.
Okay, you're welcome. All right, so as you all know, there's been a lot of bills passed. Seems like that's the trend the last 3 or 4 years. They pass a lot of bills, and many of which are transportation bills. The main one I want to talk about today is it's the Omnibus Bill. It is SB 195. It directly affects our municipalities, things that we have to do, and the MPO. So just a few topics in that do affect us. So it says municipalities within the Metropolitan Planning Organization shall update their transportation and traffic circulation element of their general plan before July 1st, 2027 to identify priority connections that remedy physical impediments such as water conveyances with the goal to enhance vehicle, transit, bicycle, and pedestrian access to significant economic recreation or other identified potential funding sources, priority destinations. The city will also have to develop cost estimates to identify a potential
potential funding sources. These priority connections would be consistent with UDOT's project prioritization of new activity transportation projects and with the county of the first class infrastructure link. I'm trying to talk this way and that way because I know there's members of DTAC here as well that might be interested in this. I'm going to skip down to a different portion. So anyway, we're going to have to work together to...
Hey, Nate, let's put you up front. So.
Oh, yeah.
Can you say those again? Vehicles, bicycles, what were the other things that have to be updated?
It's just all, so it's the transportation element of your general plan that needs to be updated. So that's to find physical impediments across things such as water conveyances. So basically when roads dead end.
It's more than just water conveyances.
Yes, and... It basically, anywhere your roads are dead, anywhere they can connect, we have to find those locations. Let's see here.
Everybody understand that?
Yeah. Do I need to go over it again?
What was the bill number?
Well, I thought
SB 195.
And it's by July 2026?
July 1st, 2027.
The MPO is required to do a report back to the Transportation Interim Committee every October.
By November 1st.
Every year by November 1st.
So that we will be working with you all to come up with a plan to move this process forward, also so we can bring that to the Interim Committee. Meyer and I talked about that. We may discuss a plan forward with the DTAC. DTAC meeting. The MPOs are required to consult with the affected municipalities. Oh, yeah, I just did the dates. So, and that's every year, so we have to do a report by November 1st of 25, 26, and 27. Okay, another topic on here that affects the MPO. This bill increases the Transportation Investment Funds, or TIF, state sales tax, 17% earmarked to 24%. This increase has no immediate revenue impact, as the bill also reallocates $330 million general fund appropriation that is currently in the TIF. But has the opportunity to grow over time with the economy. Has the opportunity. So if our economy grows,
so you can save more, but we're going to take your piggy bank.
Yes.
Okay.
Perfectly said.
What bill was that?
Yeah, what you said.
We're still on SB 195.
Okay.
This is an omnibus, so it has
okay.
a whole bunch. I'm just going to pick out a few things that are relevant to us. Let's see here. All right, this bill also eliminates annual transfer of revenue equivalent to 1.8 cents per gallon. It's approximately $35 million annually from the Transportation Fund for UDOT maintenance and preservation projects to the Transportation Investment Fund for capacity projects. This will enable UDOT to focus motor fuel tax funding on maintenance and preservation activities. So that may change what our funding for certain projects looks like maybe into the future. This bill also allows TIF funds to be used for corridor preservation. Right now, the COD funds are the main source for corridor preservation. Soon, I guess, starting right away, we will be trying to figure out how to use TIF for corridor preservation funds as well. Alright, this bill also shifts responsibility for maintaining street lighting systems on state highways or state highway intersections from municipalities to UDOT. Yeah, so if there's a street light in your city, that's on a highway, the maintenance of that will be UDOT's responsibility.
Yay.
We're always like that.
And UDOT's over here going,
Well, I don't think that that is exactly... interchanges and state to state routes.
Okay.
It's not every street light on your system.
Oh.
I'm going to be maintaining your lights downtown.
On the boulevard.
Yeah.
So the highway.
Oh, come on.
This is a signalized intersection.
That'll be the next legislative session.
All right, so that was the big one.
That's a good thing for us because there's areas within the state that didn't allow us to put lights and had the onus on the county to pay for it. Now we can do it.
Seems like a win-win. They can get their stuff fixed when they need and now people don't have to pay for those.
We'll fix the Sage of the Hill.
What's that?
Basically, the onus is like this. We'd have a signalized intersection and the lights on top of those poles that we're doing, they were the city's, and we couldn't touch them. So now we can address that lighting at those intersections on state routes. So, just make that clarification.
Thank you. There's also some interesting ones that you may want to be aware of. So HB 198 is the highway expansion on signage amendments. This bill deals with the relocation of a billboard when it must be moved due to highway construction, road widening, etc. This bill would allow for relocation within 1 mile of the original sign on either side of the highway within the same municipality or to a different location if agreed upon by the municipality.
Was this Gil Almquist's bill?
They would put a billboard at Golgotha if you could get what's hers.
Peterson.
You're welcome.
All right, SB 96, Advanced Air Mobility Amendments. This bill makes a number of changes related to advanced air mobility, including directing UDOT to conduct a community outreach and public education campaign on advanced air mobility, so watch out for UDOT to reach out to you. Directing UDOT to create an AAM. AAM is Advanced Air Mobility. AAM toolkit for political subdivisions, including model ordinances, best practices, and other resources. And adds a definition code, including flight information exchange, unmanned aircraft system, service supplier, and authoritative supplemental data service provider.
Is this for flying cars?
Yeah.
They're coming.
It directly addresses what they're calling vertiports for vertical aircraft to come down and land in the city.
Yeah, they're hoping that by the Olympics that they'll have the flying taxis, basically drones or passengers. So
I'm not going to be the first passenger.
They don't fly to Liberty.
Well, they're not just for people, they're for delivering goods. So you picture downtown Springdale where little roads, big trucks, you could solve some of that. They'd come and talk to us.
Wow.
HB 176, this one's not a transportation bill, but I thought it would be worth your time. This bill changes population requirements for county classifications. So basically what this does for us is this moves Washington County into a third class, which is a third class is now 40,000 to 260,000 for a population. And there's some other language in there that will allow some of our smaller communities to access rural grants, rural funding sources. So before, like Enterprise and Virgin, they couldn't access rural grants. So this will allow them to, but it will also exclude St. George City because that language in there says it has the exception for cities that are 100,000 or more. So anyway, SB 181, Housing Affordability
amendment. This one is also, this is not a transportation one, but it affects parking. So
what's the number again? I'll see what?
SB 181. The bill amends minimum parking and garage design standards for cities and counties, including dimensions of parking spaces, parking space for one or two family dwellings or townhome, unobstructed tandem parking spaces, single family attached or detached, owner-occupied affordable homes. I didn't write down what size those are. If you want me to, I'm happy to get those details and send them to you.
But basically, it doesn't require them to build a garage. In that bill, or is it a different bill?
I think that was a different bill.
Okay.
Yeah. HB 290, Bicycle Lane Safety Amendments. This bill prohibits driving or parking within designated bike lanes, with the exception of turning emergency or service vehicles. Designated bike lanes are not shared or shared lanes for both motor vehicles and bicycles, but are bike lanes designated through striping, signage, pavement barriers. This bill, I believe it came from that a lot of people are obstructing bike lanes, and it's really dangerous because cyclists will have to move into traffic when speeds aren't similar. And with the exception of things like, this gives like emergency vehicles and mail carriers and stuff to use those bike lanes. Anyway, okay, the last one I have on here is HB 229, Transportation Fund Amendments. This bill further defines corridor preservation to mean the path or proposed path of a transportation facility that exists or may exist. Transportation facilities may include highway or transit fixed guideway. So that's all I have.
Questions, anybody?
I just want to say how much we love all the best bills. You know, we love those. This bill almost won the number of subs this year. There were 7 subs. This bill. But,
they should have put e-cigarettes in this too.
They should have. But there's one element of the bill I was going to ask. So they require now within this bill an air ambulance dispatch service. Is there any provisions in this bill that pays for those type of components or... If you don't know right off the spot, I just wondered if you.
I will look it up though. Let me grab my pen.
So no, I didn't. They ask for a lot of things, but they forget to give us the money to not only incorporate them, but then.
Well,
to
they don't
have
yeah.
All right,
say your question one more time for air. Med?
Yeah, air ambulance. It's a requirement that you have air ambulance dispatch service. So.
I have no idea what that is. What's air ambulance dispatch?
Helicopter for medical.
Okay, that's what we assumed.
Yeah.
Something fancier.
Yeah. It's just one of the elements that we'd like to have some money to incorporate in order to.
Kurt, let me know that every bill, first bill is always SB1, unfunded mandate.
One unfunded. Yeah, I'll write that down.
Okay. I'll get that back to you on that one.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything to add to that?
No.
Okay. Local government updates, and we'll expand this to the engineers in the back. If you want to talk about something going on in your city?
I do. Sorry, I'm talking too much today. The St. George to Zion route, in order to increase ridership, we're trying something this week that other municipalities along the way might want to try. We are inviting anybody to catch this bus on Thursday at 11:30 in Springdale. We're going to ride down to Hurricane to Del Taco and buy them all lunch and then bring it back to Springdale. We just want them to get a feel for the bus and how comfortable it is. So if you're not seeing a lot of ridership from your area, you may want to do something to encourage it.
It's
all you can eat, whatever you order?
No, I think it's a snack taco.
One comment on that route. So, as you're aware, that customer ticketing app, you know, has been a hot topic. And so, City of St. George, we're actually doing an app for our recreation, a lot of our reservations and payments and everything. So we found out that, lo and behold, we can just create a ticketing app for that same company that we've already got a contract with. And so, I'm meeting with them this afternoon, but we're going to get that thing coming a lot quicker.
Anything else back there? UDOT.
Yeah. Last meeting, I had some questions on construction schedule, so I'm prepared to just go really quick through those projects so you hear it. SR 34, St. George Boulevard project should be constructed this fall of 2025. Okay. The SR 18, the St. George Boulevard to Main Street, so the Bluff project, start 2026 through the summer of 2027. The I-15 widening from exit 6 to exit 8, the plan is late spring of 2026 through the summer of 2028. The I-15 Arizona State Line Cottonwood Creek, this is just a microsurfacing project preservation one. We'll start this late summer fall, and then we'll just take that one season. The SR 318, the turn lane into Quail Creek Marina, that will be completed by May of this year. And then I-15 southbound passing lane from 16 to 20 is anticipated to start construction the fall of 2026. The SR9, Leverkin to Zions, this is a pavement preservation micro. That will happen this summer. The SR9 Virgin River bridge fencing will happen this winter. So I think that's when we'll be ready for that. The SR7 passing lane up the cut, 50 mile post 15.8 to 17.5, construction summer of 2026 or next summer. And then we have that SR18 Snow Canyon White Rocks Trailhead improvement. We're moving that, and that should be completed this summer. So that's kind of the schedules that was asked about last time.
Thank you.
When does the 6 to 8 wall survey go out?
I'm not sure. I'll have to get back to you on that.
But in the timing too, traditionally was like before the whole.
Do you want me to speak to that?
Yes,
go ahead.
So the environmental reevaluation has to be done and signed off by UDOT before any balloting can take place. We're anticipating the public hearing around that about mid-June, so we'll be balloting likely mid-July, August. So.
And when does the flood street study, did you mention that?
That's part of the 6 to 8.
Oh, okay.
That's part of that same. That's why we have to do the environmental reevaluation so we can incorporate those two underpasses.
Can you say again the bridge fencing update? Was it summer, fall, winter?
Winter.
Winter.
Yeah, winter.
Okay.
This winter.
West Street and overpass. You run under I-15?
Those will go under.
We're raising 15.
Yes, we're raising I-15 like 22 feet.
So would you remind us what the timetable is on the overpasses on SR9? It is crazy getting out to where you folks are.
These days. In 2019, they said 10 years, and are we 5 more years out?
Are you talking about from I-15 to San?
16.
Yes.
To SR7.
Well, there's no funded projects right now.
They are still in phase one, so we're anticipating or hopeful it will be funding within there, but that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the same thing, right? There's a series of three overpasses that are just desperately needed there.
Yeah.
Interchanges, yeah. And so when are they?
They're in phase one. They're in our plan, but they're
not
funded. Not
funded?
So there's no schedule yet.
So is it something I need to go to the legislature to push that in priority, or what happens with that?
Well, we have a process. It just has to go statewide. And each year when we go through our programming workshop with the Transportation Commission, we evaluate all those that fall within phase one. We score them by the criteria that was set by the legislature, and then they fall in of when we can do it. So we're funded out in that program already out through 2030, 31. So we're already funded out that $1.3 billion out that far. So, I mean, you're talking at least six, seven years before it'd even be funded if it fell within that.
Every legislator that comes down here to visit needs to be required to drive out to Hurricane and back before they can come into town.
Well, and what's interesting, in 2019 they said 10 years that it would be happening, but now you're...
But that's phase one. Phase one's still 10 years. So, I mean, we're following the process. It's just there's a lot of needs for that type of money.
Yeah. I was just curious.
Yeah. From a planning perspective, that is the top priority for UDOT, from congestion and what we're seeing there. Those projects are the top priority from UDOT's portion of the MPO plan. So we would expect that those would be funded next in the area, because Nagy here is on the commission, and we coordinate with him and say, from a UDOT perspective, these are the top priority that needs to be funded next. And so the Transportation Commission is the one that allocates those funds when they're available. So we're coordinating and making sure that the right people know that those are the priority, because that's where the need is. But it's, you just got to wait for that funding for that.
It is in the list.
It
is.
I've seen it on there, but I wasn't in the...
But it's a ways out.
Right now it's a ways out. And we're competing against some very big projects up north, the Mountain View Corridor, the things that are happening out towards Eagle Mountain and Saratoga Springs. I mean, there's a lot of money up there right now that's needed also.
Are the Olympics...
Continue, like he says, it's a big priority for our region to continue to see where that falls. And
are the Olympics going to displace some of these priorities, move things up?
Not so much. There may be, like, there's a couple projects what I've heard that may be moved up, but that was just between that program. It still doesn't open up money. But there's a couple projects that I think we need to get to sooner than later, like at Kimball's Junction up there. They had a project that was scheduled out. That may need to be moved up sooner. But most of the Olympics aren't going to affect our schedules.
Well, we need to advocate for that somehow.
For those of you traveling to SL9, the speed limit has reduced from 65 to 55, so don't get tickets. Watch for it.
Nobody knows that.
Victor, you need to know that.
Yeah, I do need to know that. But to Mayor Billings' point, you hit SR9 at certain times.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
That's why I have to. 50.8 to
17.5,
I believe.
Thank you.
So accept that big cut.
Okay. Federal updates. I know we have at least two of them here.
Also in the process.
process of next level confirmations. You're probably very familiar with the current Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy. He is in office, confirmed with a 77-22 vote in the Senate, which we're very, very pleased with his efforts thus far. We did actually confirm five days ago the Deputy Secretary, Stephen Bradford. And interestingly enough, so the Senator has been heavily involved in the confirmation process, so we're in the next level and the next level, and it's going to take several months before we are fully filled that we might be able to see things here on the state and local level. Senator Lee is impressed with the fact that the Department of Transportation is eliminating many of the green initiatives, as well as some of the DEI situation, which became heavily influential within the office. Therefore, we can restore the state's ability to work in relation to building a safer transportation situation and more efficient projects. So that's my report. If you have any questions, yes.
Commissioner, please report on the top of the list on Senator Lee's Northern Corridor discussion that we have.
Now, you were in the room, right?
Yeah.
With that, and that's one of the top priorities that he has. And I will be meeting with my chief of staff this week, and I will report back to him. This should be the number one item in Southern Utah.
He said he was. That was his number one. You said reduce the size of federal employees. Does that involve Ozempic or?
I know those companies.
Only in certain special cases.
I need to bring two priority then. Have we had any timeline for the House's act?
I need to bring my snare drum and splash cymbals.
No, that encourages.
Yeah.
Come on, Chris.
In relation to the House's act, we're hopeful that there will be some movement. We do have some opportunities within the process. Now that we've gotten through the budget, reconciliation may be one of those tools. Although in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, the Trump administration said that they were very, they were leaning towards housing on federal property. It's an interesting article. I think if you were to combine those two, we would have a solution for increasing.
Is that Wall Street Journal you said?
Yes.
I would say that's our number two priority, right after.
Very good. I'll report that back.
So I was in D.C. last month, and I just put in on the car rental that I have, I just put in for the manager special, and I got it, and they gave me an EV vehicle, and the hotel that I was staying at, every hotel in that area, there's like a two-box radius, they all parked in the same place. You could not charge there. And I went to five places, and they all said, like on your app, that you could go there and charge. There wasn't one place to charge an EV vehicle. I brought my vehicle back almost empty because there was nothing to charge in D.C. Insane. So, I mean, not saying that they should install charging, but I'm just saying if they're going to make it mandatory, they should have places to charge them. And they're making those. So I'm not really in favor of them, but I'm just saying that. Something they probably need to consider if that's going to be their demand, that they have places you can at least charge your
vehicle. Well, and that's why that CARB Act was introduced, because yeah. California has a whole different look at
right.
EVs and otherwise.
Right.
I would say the last Secretary of Transportation failed miserably on installing these charging stations. So hopefully we're on track.
And I appreciate Congresswoman Malloy and Senator Lee on working, because NRCS is something that our city is very interested in, making sure we can finish our irrigation expansion and funding the government so that we can have farmers and cities still function is important to all of us. So please express the gratitude of them moving that forward, because we need to be able to still fund our cities with the things that we're doing. And we haven't used NRCS for years and years and years, but I think it was in 1991 that our city used something with NRCS. But right now, we need to finish funding our secondary irrigation expansion. We'll be using 30% less water just by our irrigation, because right now it's going through an open ditch and it's pressurizing it. So this is important for us to finish this project.
They're a great resource.
Yeah, and we need to have the government funded for cities and farmers.
Am I missing anybody?
Thank you.
Thank you. No? Any other business? DTAC April 2nd, DTEC April 15th. Motion to adjourn. Thank you. Is there a second? Anybody voting nay? Didn't think so. Off we go.